I'm Demi Roberts, Stage and Studio, recording in my office studio. We're featuring music from Aaron Spriggs, and he'll be performing music and his poetry on Tuesday, May 12th at 6 p.m. Visit VanportMosaic.org. What do you do when you're an organization that has a yearly, month-long festival of events in theater, films, walking tours, and art exhibits, all located around North Portland? But then COVID-19 hits. Most organizations would likely cancel it and hope for better times next year. But Vanport Mosaic decided to create something new for them and for most of the artists participating. They took it online. The festival is going to continue online as a virtual festival through May 30th. With me via Skype to talk about how all of this happened is co-director of Vanport Mosaic, Laura Laforte. Hey, Laura.
Hey, Dime.
Good to see you. How are you?
I'm okay.
What's it been like for you at home?
Pretty chaotic. You know, I have a child, I have a husband. I'm grateful that they're here, but, you know, emotionally and logistically, everything is challenging, like for everyone else. Probably less because, again, I have a roof over my head and I still have some work to do.
Yeah, I feel pretty fortunate because I've always worked at home, you know, and unless I do something like theater or something like that, you know, but yeah, I do feel lucky that I'm still being able to do most everything, except go to events.
How about that? So, yeah.
Yeah. How about that? It's a big change that way.
It is. It is. It's every day feels different.
Yeah, yeah. But you're doing something pretty amazing, which I want to talk about. But before we get to that, I just wanted to ask you, earlier I talked with you a few weeks ago, and you were worried about your relatives and friends in Italy. And I just wanted to find out, are they doing okay? Have you been in contact?
Thank you for asking me, Dime. Yeah, they've been in the situation we find ourselves in for much longer. Of course, my parents are older and their health is definitely not great. And so they are in a very vulnerable situation. But they're hanging in there. And Italy is actually kind of reopening as we speak. And so we'll see what happens there. But it's been definitely emotionally draining. And I think that is truly probably one of the motivation of the festival.
Well, that is actually better news than when I talked to you last time. So that's good to hear.
Thank you.
So social distancing, you know, it's not easy with a child, I would imagine. How do you explain that, you know, to your daughter?
Well, this is the thing. She's been living through this even before it happened here in the United States because of my family in Italy. So she's been witnessing, you know, the emotional token of all this way before it happened directly to her. So I would say that all of us, when we started experiencing the social distancing here, we got here already a little bit drained because we experienced it from distance. So it's been tough, but again, we are lucky, and we each of us found something that gives us joy. And so that's really a blessing.
Have you gotten into a routine?
No, but I didn't have a routine even before this. So see, in that sense, it doesn't feel different for us because it's always been pure chaos here. And I'm pretty introverted. So not being constantly out there, that is not truly the my biggest problem.
Well, what is different, though, is that you've been creating something different. For Vanport Mosaic, but for a lot of groups, you know, that could use this as a template in the future. For most arts leaders, as with people everywhere, this has been a time for reinvention, for, you know, thinking about things in a new way with creativity and endurance, right? And I think that this kind of a shutdown for so many arts venues and events has never happened quite like this before. I remember sometimes like post 9/11, you know, there was a week or so where things just, you know, didn't happen everything was shut down, but nothing beyond, I guess, some physical, you know, force of nature tragedy to this level that I can recall. So this is a big deal, you know, and everybody's had to do a lot of introspection. What has been, you know, introspection for you as an arts leader?
I mean, it's a reflection that I think as small nonprofits, especially, we constantly have to engage with. It is the why we do what we do, right? What is our contribution? What is the purpose of what we do? Is it worth it? Is it redundant? Is it hurtful? So I think those questions, of course, in this situation are even more relevant than ever. And so for me, it's been very much the why of doing things the way we do them. So in that sense, I mean, I wish we didn't need this kind of a tragedy to sit with these huge questions, but I took it as an opportunity to really go deeper in this.
Well, in case you just joined us, I'm Dime Roberts, stage and studio, with my guest via Skype, Laura Laforti, and she is the co-director and co-founder of Vanport Mosaic. And you can find out more about their digital festival, which we're going to be talking about, running until May 30th at vanportmosaic.org. And you can also find that link at kbu.fm/stageandstudio or stageandstudio.org, where you can hear a podcast of the show later on today. So you and your co-director and co-founder, Damaris Webb, of Vanport Mosaic, usually do an in-person festival with a lot of different disciplines. But with the COVID-19 shutdowns and stay-home measures, you personally, Laura, decided to take on a challenge of adapting this festival into one that could be attended virtually. When did this idea come to you?
This idea came maybe a week or two after things started to really shut down here. And again, because of my connection to Italy and what I was able to experience ahead of time, in a way, I was able to kind of see the future, sadly. The decision to cancel the real festival came pretty early on because I had a sense that it would happen in the same way that it happened in Italy, and things could not actually happen in what we say real life now. So that became soon, initially a small idea. Maybe we should convert a few of the events that's possible to kind of translate in a virtual space. It never been the idea of replicating or translating, or this is not a backup plan. This is not instead of, this is a different thing, really. And I know it better now after basically a month of working on it. There's no way to replicate or to translate what happens in a physical space when we share stories together, especially as the Vanport Mosaic, where we always choose very intentionally the spaces and the venues where we share stories. There are always venues that are meaningful and carry stories in the walls or on the ground, invisible history all around you. So that cannot be translated at all in a virtual space. So that never been the goal or the purpose. The purpose initially was to raise fund for the artists who were committed to do the festival. We are all struggling as small nonprofits and individual artists and activists and cultural organizers. And I just wanted to see if through the festival we could actually contribute something to each of us and as a gesture of appreciation, no matter what. So initially it was kind of a gesture of solidarity. And of course, a spirit of experimentation and learning together. When I called you, that was really what I was thinking, right? I said, well, we are here. Why don't we try something? Let's use this to learn something together, how to adapt some of our work and ideas in these new platforms. And if nothing else, we learn something together. It doesn't matter if at the end we cancel. So it was it was always kind of an open space, kind of a playground. And a little by little, we started to become more and more ambitious. Each of us, I feel, as festival contributors, we started to feel a little bit more courageous in what to do. And everybody started, and still now we are like, we're reopening tomorrow, and people are still changing their mind and trying something different and adapting and changing the story they want to tell in response to what they feel and what they experience. And so it became something else, I would say much better. I don't know when we start doing the events, if the technology works and all that, but truly that doesn't matter to me. What matters is that we stay connected as a community. We created a sense of abundance in these times of scarcity. There is an abundance of ideas, of courage, of solidarity, of mutual support. And I couldn't ask of anything better right now. Truly, it's been something that kept me going in times where I felt pretty depressed and helpless. And so there is a sense of gratitude for everybody who has been part of this. And I hope people will attend, whatever that means. But also the stories that now are, when I'm looking at the program, I see how all these stories are feeding into each other and really respond to the core questions that actually were the original questions around the real festival. Who gets to be American? And what does it mean to be American today? Those questions are more important than ever as we speak, as we see the continuum of history and historical oppression and injustice. I mean, COVID-19 is definitely amplifying and making it very obvious. But as we go through the program and we listen to all these stories in through films, through dance, through poetry, through theater or presentations, well, this is nothing new. This is nothing new. Those who don't count, those who are whose history and contribution have been erased over and over, are still the one who are the mostly impacted. And so I feel this festival was originally an experiment and something to do together. And now I feel this festival is really important, and it happens online. I hope that more people that would actually have come to the real events can actually reflect on these stories.
Well, I want to say that we are recording this ahead of time. And so by the time this airs, you will have already figured out a lot of stuff because, you know, you're about to open it, but we are recording ahead of time. I'm really curious about how you curated. It seems like, I think what it kind of happened organically, because you reached out to me and Media Rights, my organization, and Samson Sierath, who also works with me, but also has his own show that he's doing about his Lao background, right? And his trip to Laos, you know, and what the effect that had on him. And some of the other artists include Native American storyteller Ed Edmo. I love Ed Edmo. I've known him through the years. Wonderful storyteller. Musician Michelle Fuji of Unit Sozo, poetry from Ken Yoshikawa, Lakayana Drury, and Aaron Spriggs also doing poetry, all of them, and activist and dancer and choreographer Chisao Hata is also doing a conversation too.
So with Chisao, again, we are still shifting and responding. And so we are hoping to do a conversation facilitated by Chisao about the role of artists in capturing and making meaning of histories. Again, we are responding to what we feel and what the big questions are for us right now. And so initially was a different conversation that she was going to facilitate. And in the past couple of days, we actually thought that that would be a pretty important conversation to have. So we are planning on inviting Hank Pender and possibly Daryl Grant and others who, again, whose work in different disciplines have been has been truly a way to honoring and making meaning of the meaningless, as Hank Pender would say.
Yeah, Hank Pender is a master artist, visual artist, and Daryl Grant, of course, master jazz musician and composer. So, yeah, you've got some great talent there. What I also think is interesting is that you got technical help through Ceremon House, because this is all digital, this is all online. And so all of us had to figure out, how do we, you know, switch hats? And for some of us, it's easier, you know. I've had media experience, so just, you know, tell me which buttons to push, you know, kind of thing. But that, it was great. And also just the whole aspect of maybe doing conversations through Zoom. That was new to me, too. So you got some help through Ceremon House to facilitate that, too.
So what's been truly another incredible aspect of this festival is meeting all in with this challenge, right? Ceremon House is a venue, it's a physical building, and we've done in the past beautiful events, including Hank Pender exhibit at Ceremon House. Interestingly enough, we were truly planning on even a deeper collaboration right before the building had to shut down. So for a venue, the challenges are incredible at this moment, right? What is the role of a venue when you don't even know when you're going to open the door and what is the safety around that building will be? So as a way to deepen our collaboration, we really explore how we can learn together, Ceremon House, Vampir Mosaic, and Open Signal, who is another entity that's been instrumental in this effort. All these organizations had to kind of reinvent and learn and collaborate on a new landscape. And so each of us wanted to understand what are the possibilities online, right? What is that each organization can offer to artists and cultural groups? So we truly experimented, all of us, and Confluence Project has been an incredible partner, where we all experimented with Zoom recording and crowdcast. Now we are using another platform, OneStream, to upload all our videos and simulcast. So it's been an incredible collaboration and co-learning opportunities. And these are all collaborations. Again, the Vampir Mosaic, the reason of the name truly is to really encapsulate this idea of creating something together, creating a narrative together. So for me, in that sense, this is not different. We are creating a mosaic. Each of us is adding a piece to make this picture possible, this painting, this image, this story. And so those are all the beautiful pieces that people might not see in the events, but there are always the behind the scene that are truly a part of the story of how we do what we do.
I think it's also exciting to have closed captioning too, because often events aren't as that inclusive, you know, so it's great to be able to offer that online. To me, in some ways, you know, this can be more inclusive than a general public event, because I think people forget that there are people who cannot get to those public spaces. I hope that this creates a new model in many respects, where, yes, you can have a public event, but how do you also reach people who can't get there? And maybe it might even, in the future, create another revenue stream in some respects, don't you think?
I actually believe it. I believe it now, truly. Again, initially, we were all thinking of doing, this is not going to be any good, but let's try it, right? Let's just try just to learn. And little by little, I'm seeing what we are creating. Again, it's something different. And I do feel that there's incredible opportunities, frankly. Also because I'm having people contacting Vampire Mosaic more and more to ask to access our oral history videos, for example, so to organize a presentation or a virtual visit to their classrooms, right? Now everybody needs to do online learning. Truly, we have such an engaging way of teaching history and social justice education. And so I absolutely believe there are opportunities to do workshops, to do presentations, classes, webinars. And I do believe that people slowly will get used to pay even to attend events online. I'm doing it myself as someone who loves art and just cultural experiences. I do appreciate that you bring up the accessibility aspect, because that's been also an incredible opportunity to learn. And we are very lucky to have a collaboration with Cymaspace, which is another local nonprofit, incredible advocacy work around accessibility for the deaf and hard of hearing community. And so we are learning with them. They are providing mentorship, and we are not going to be able to provide captions and sign interpretation for all events, not because they're not capable, but because, again, we are still creating the events, so the timeline is getting tighter and tighter. But we are committed to keep working with them. Specifically, the big event on May 30th, which is the culmination and the end of the festival, when on the 72nd anniversary of the Vampire flood, I'm curating an all-day event, basically, to remember Vampire. And that will be possible to make completely accessible, because we have enough time, and I'm going to do a screening of oral history. So those are videos that I already have, and we are in the process of captioning. So all these, I think, again, these were always afterthoughts, right? We always think, oh, we have to make things accessible. ADA, the building is accessible. Oh, we need to provide a sign language interpretation. Okay, well, done, check. Did we do the outreach to actually let the community know that we do it? It's always a little bit of an afterthought, not because we don't want to or it's not critical to us, but we are very small nonprofits and we don't know. We don't have the funding and we don't know how to do these things. So once again, this long pause, personally, it allowed me to invest in what matters and really make a commitment that I hope we can continue. And again, providing a learning opportunity for all of us involved in the festival to take a seed of what we did together and hopefully take it to the next level when we are able to gather again in physical space.
Well, I think all of this is great. And I also think that, you know, often theater, performing artists in dance and music are often feel like they're competing, like with Netflix or television or any of the other streaming services. And this is one way to, you know, offer something, you know, that is in direct competition with those. So I think that's also a plus too. And this could be a template, and I hope you're documenting it. And I think other artists and arts organizations can learn from this, you know, and perhaps use it in the future. And you're right. A lot of times the accessibility is not necessarily an afterthought because we're careless, but because there's just so little time and resources. But this could be built in, you know, already. So, you know, the more you do it. So kudos to you. And I hope you are documenting all of this.
No, are you? I thought you are.
In my head.
Me too. Another component that I think it's interesting as a model, potentially, is funding, right? As I told you initially, and I share with all the artists and cultural groups, I mean, it's great that there are all these events online and we do all this free stuff for everyone. The fear is, once again, then people get used to the fact that this is free and they don't want to pay. So I was a little bit concerned about doing that. And so, but we are overwhelmed with requests and with constant fundraising efforts, and it's pretty draining. So I thought that I think there are other sources of funding. Of course, the emergency fund, we didn't apply to any of that. But for timing, for, again, as I mentioned to you, I didn't want to be the toilet paper grabber of the nonprofit world. And, you know, when people...
I'm not sure what that means, but a lot of that small business, I mean, all that those emergency loans and stuff actually went to big companies anyway.
So you know? There you so have it, yeah.
There you have it. So don't feel bad about
no,
that.
No, I mean, the thing is that we thought that there were groups that truly needed to survive. And for us, we are such a nimble organization. But also say that there was lots of intentionality even in thinking about finances and how to support each of us through this effort. We were very lucky to have some sponsors who initially thought that this wasn't the same thing, and so it was a backup. It was a backup plan.
Well, we're running out of time, and so I just wanted to also personally thank you because you were the spark for us for Meteorites in the ISM project. We had a spring and summer tour, and we didn't know, you know, what are we going to do now that everything's closed down. For indefinitely in some respects. So this has been the spark to be able to produce this online, at least two of our monologues. So thank you, Laura. I mean, that was, you know, that you do have an effect. So I just wanted you to know that. You can stream the virtual Vanport Mosaic Festival on facebook.com/VanportMosaic. And I'll have that link at stageandstudio.org and kbu.fm/stageandstudio. Laura Laforte, co-director of Vanport Mosaic, thank you for talking to me via Skype. And I admire your positive energy and action. You are an inspiration in this community.
Thank you, Dime, and thank you for being part of this. You're a big part of this festival.
We all try. Before we go, I want to mention what I just mentioned earlier, that we're going to be presenting as part of Meteorites, the ISM Project, two performances at the virtual Vanport Mosaic Festival. It's followed by a Zoom conversation about COVID-19 anti-Asian American Pacific Islander racism. That's going to be May 16th for Samson Sia Roth performing his personal piece, See Her Strength, and May 23rd to see Jane Vogel Manturi perform a piece I wrote called Harvest. Both shows and conversations will be at 6 p.m. and they'll last about, you know, 40, 45 minutes. And we're going to be going out with music by Shalanda Sims of Vanport the Musical. And I hope you tune into her, too. Do you know when her thing is going to be on?
It will be on May 30th, you know, in honor of the Vanport flood.
May 30th. It'll close out the festival. So visit VanportMosaic.org. Actually, visit Facebook.com/VanportMosaic to see it live. That's it for Stage and Studio. Hear this show again at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. And like us on facebook.com/stage, the letter and studio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts.